yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yeah, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a screaming now. They brought death to our hometown, boys. Death to our hometown, boys. Death to our hometown, boys.
Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus, the show, Alternative Visions, where we talk about the fight against the increasing economic and political crises in the U.S. Okay, in recent shows, if you've been listening, we've been talking about attacks on democracy and civil rights occurring not only in the U.S., but abroad as well. We've had a couple shows about the military coup in Egypt, for example. We've talked about what's going on in Europe. And also, last show, we talked about the Democracy Conference in Wisconsin, where these different attacks on democracy in the U.S. have been discussed at length, and actions have been put together by various groups to move forward and defend against them. Okay, today, we're also going to talk about this question of democracy in the U.S., and we're going to focus our attention a little more closely on a particular example of that, and what's going on in North Carolina. Voting rights, of course, are under attack across the United States. You know, it's kind of ironic, isn't it? We've just had the 50th anniversary March on Washington, which established some advances and progress on voting rights in the United States. You know, the 50th anniversary here, just last weekend. We'll have an upcoming show on some folks who were there next week. But, you know, it's ironic that on the 50th anniversary, the Supreme Court of the United States last June pretty much pulled the plug on the federal government enforcing voting rights at the state level. A number of states were identified in 1963 in the 64 Voting Rights Act as abusing folks' rights to vote, and therefore the government assumed an overseeing role, and those states had to clean up their practices, and the government watched over it. Well, now with the Supreme Court decision in June, a good part of that oversight is gone. The Supreme Court said there's no problem anymore, you know, and the ink wasn't even dried on the Supreme Court decision, where a number of states took that as a green light and started intensifying what had already begun in terms of a restriction on voting rights. It's kind of like a second end to Reconstruction, you history buffs out there. Remember Reconstruction in the 1870s when efforts to reform some states, the Confederacy in particular, to provide rights for all folks, a deal was struck between the two parties, and what happened was the military pulled out of the South and unleashed forces of reaction and violence, which took decades until 1963 to end. Okay, a little bit of a mini political reconstruction, end of Reconstruction going on here with the Supreme Court decision, I would add. Okay, so we want to talk about that topic. You know, voting rights are the key. They're you know, the minimum guarantee of democracy. That's not to say that democracy is strictly or totally the right to vote, but, you know, without it, it's hard to imagine democracy, isn't it? And now we have states like Texas and North Carolina and others that are putting all these blocks in the way of rights to vote. And not just minorities, you know. I mean, it's applied to students and poor and so forth. This isn't just an ethnic attack on rights. This is a general attack. And at the same time, we see across the country limitations and attacks on civil rights and labor rights, teachers, and right to work, Michigan's right to have unions and so forth, all across the country, intensified in these Republican states where Republican governors and right-wingers have really taken over. And we want to talk about an example of that today, particularly focusing the laser a bit, laser light on North Carolina, which is kind of a leading edge of this attack on democracy and civil rights right now. And I have three very special guests with me this evening from North Carolina who are going to tell us precisely what's going on and what the resistance is all about. Let me introduce them at this point. I have a Reverend Nelson Johnson, who is pastor of the Faith Community Church in Greensboro, executive director of the Beloved Community Movement and Center, and leads the Interfaith Workers Justice Center, a workers' center group affiliated with the AFL-CIO, in Greensboro. Very important, well-regarded and respected grassroots community leader. Welcome, Mr. Reverend Johnson. And I have Jahmu Dillahunt, a founder of the Black Workers for Justice, who has been involved for decades here, resisting the offshoring by corporations of jobs and fighting for safety and health problems in the state. He's the past president of the Postal Workers Union, a member of the Raleigh, North Carolina Central Labor Council, and a statewide coordinator for these Moral Mondays, as it's called, protests that have been going on. Okay, and then Zach Robinson, a return guest of ours, a longtime member of the American Professors Union and a participant in many of the Moral Mondays protests for the year. These three individuals kind of represent different parts of that state, the east, the western part, and the central part. So if anybody knows what's going on in North Carolina in the attack on democracy and civil rights, it's these three gentlemen. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We got to get the news out about what's happening in North Carolina and how important that fight is, not just for folks in North Carolina, but for folks across the U.S. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jack.
Okay, let's see. Reverend Nelson, you're on the line, I presume?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you. Reverend, why don't you start out and tell us, give the folks a picture of what's been happening in North Carolina, what the issues are, what the resistance is, because, you know, what's going on there is not getting into the mainstream media very much. Folks really don't understand, I think, what the importance of what's happening in North Carolina. Would you tell us, you know, what this movement is, what the attack is, what the resistance is?
Well, let me start with the attack. Our General Assembly, our legislature body, has unfolded since January the most devastating attack on democracy, on poor people, since Reconstruction. The voter suppression law is just outrageous, it imposes very severe limits, starting with voter ID cards, restricting the amount of time you have to vote from 17 to 10 days, eliminating pre-registration of 16 and 17-year-olds, and forcing, eliminating straight party line voting. College students can't vote where they usually vote. In fact, at Appalachian State in the western region, they moved 9,000 people there vote, and they moved the voting facility about 14 miles away on a narrow one street in the agricultural building. As far as you could get it from the students. These are just a few examples. When it comes to Medicaid, just refused to receive it because of the Obama Medicare program. And it has had a just a chilling effect, a devastating effect. But the other side of the coin is that one of the most powerful, most significant, broadest and grounded movement that I've seen in my 65 years here is being built. As a matter of fact, on this very day, There are 13 Moral Mondays taking place in each congressional district of North Carolina. It's one of the reasons I'm going to have to leave a little early. But thousands of people are gathering, and it's not just a protest rally. People are organizing to make real changes, and we have to get rid of these immoral and obscene legislators who are so totally detached from the welfare of other human beings and seem to be in the captive grip of ideology and perhaps the corporate world. So that's just a brief intro to what's happening here and the fight back that's also going on here.
Can you tell us what are the demands of these 13, or at least summarize a few of the major demands of these 13 protests going on now in the different congressional districts there?
Well, the legislature has already passed 20 of the worst bills in the history of our state. The what we feel our task is that all of these people have to be voted out. You know, there are teachers, 4,000 teachers are being laid off, $10 million diverted from the education budget that is now supporting vouchers and private schools, including some of the religious schools. The income tax credit that would benefit 900,000 people is being eliminated. And objectively, taxes being raised on 80% of the poorest people in the state. All of these are issues that we are raising, but our push is that we have to change the face of the General Assembly in the state of North Carolina, and we have to do it next year. We're going to do the best we can with changing some of the laws, or at least bending some of the policies now. But we believe that there has to be a massive overhaul of the General Assembly.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you for that overview. It sounds like the issues are even broader than voting rights. Of course, you gave a litany here of some of the tactics that are being used to limit people's right to vote or put real obstacles in that right to vote, if not totally eliminating it. That's, of course, the first step. You prevent people from voting, then you can do whatever you want.
That's right.
Then, of course, but, you know, what you've said gives a broader picture. It's not just an attack on voting rights. They're not waiting, the legislature, to just prohibit people from voting. They're going on an offensive, sounds like, you know, on the tax front, on teachers and education and so forth. And you know it
and on jobs.
Jobs. You know, well, right.
Cutting workers. 70,000 workers lost their unemployment benefits in July. Another 100,000 will lose them in the 1st of January. It is a cruel and mean-spirited austerity program. The voting suppression is the way they plan to keep it and to grow it. That's why we think that's so key. But it is really the door that allows them to carry out all of these other draconian policies that affect every phase of life in the state. Education, pre-K, employment, Medicaid, and poor people who don't have access to the kind of medical treatment that is needed. It is really obscene what this legislature is doing. But I'm encouraged and I'm excited by the fact that 1,000 people already were arrested, and that reflected a small percentage of the people who turned out. So the fight back in this state, I think, is awesome. As a matter of fact, I said earlier that there will be Moral Mondays, of course it's Wednesday, on this day, but it corresponds with the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. And as you said earlier, it's ironic that all of this is happening as we celebrate the 50th anniversary of some movement forward. Right now, there's a big push I think 9 southern states have introduced similar legislation. North Carolina's, I believe, is the worst, worse than South Carolina, worse than Mississippi. And that's why it's so important for us to fight this all the way and in every way that we can.
Is there any efforts to coordinate these resistance responses with other states and other movements in other states?
Some of your other guests on here may be in a better position to speak to that than I am. I do know that we get calls from other states who are taking up some version or inspired by the Moral Monday activities. On what degree there might be explicit coordination, I'm not sure. I can't speak to that.
Okay. Certainly, if there were, it may get more national attention, which I think is really needed here in this particular case. I'm not an expert on North Carolina laws, but is there a recall? Are there recall provisions in North Carolina? Recall
there
legislators?
And that hasn't emerged as a major tactic right now. It might. We have about a year and a half, or year and three-fourths, maybe before the election comes up. But I hear what you are raising, that might be a possibility. Right now, what we do know is that the support for Moral Monday by a recent polling agent is 47%, and the support for the North Carolina General Assembly is 20%. So this movement has far outstripped in terms of the support of the public in North Carolina, the legislature that's in office right now.
Yeah, sometimes even if you're uncertain you can get a recall election date before the next election, you know, sometimes it has the effect of forcing some of these radical legislators to think twice and to slow down. Anyway,
it could be a powerful tool.
Sure. But
there may be some people researching that.
Yeah, particularly if you focus on, choosing and cherry pick your best shots. You know, not all of them, but the weakest ones. You know, so. But who am I to tell you what to do down there? I'm sure you guys have got it in hand and know what you're doing. Well, that's a real sobering but comprehensive overview, and thank you for providing that for our listeners. Let's see, is Ojama on? Ojama, is he on? No, I guess he didn't make it on. Ojama Dillahunt, who was a labor activist and involved in some of these protests, I understand. But Zach Robinson, you were on, aren't you?
Yes.
Okay. Zach, would you like to add anything to what Reverend Nelson Johnson had to say?
Well, Jack, Reverend Johnson really, I think, laid it out. He laid out the situation that we're confronting here in the state. A couple of things I would like to add that, you know, both of us have been involved in for much longer than this Moral Monday movement, which is been going on since April 29th with the first arrests. But prior, for 8 years prior to that, there was a historic Thousands on Jones Street coalition that was established by many of the same organizations that are now united in this much more intense Moral Monday effort. And, you know, that historic Thousands on Jones Street coalition has proved to be really a very powerful instrument of change in this state. Before these things were taken away from us, I think the historic Thousands on Jones Street movement was instrumental in helping to win the union organizing drive at the largest slaughterhouse in the world in Tar Heel, North Carolina. It was instrumental in securing early voting in North Carolina. And, a number of other demands that it had put forward in the form of a 14-point people's agenda, we had actually won. The problem is that there was a huge sort of redistricting that went on throughout the state that really cut off people's ability to try to further influence the legislature through voting. And since the gerrymandering took place, for example, in the last elections, a majority of the voters actually voted for Democratic candidates, but the vast majority of legislative seats went to Tea Party Republicans. So it really, this whole thing, you know, came as a deep shock. I mean, I guess everybody knew what the results of the gerrymandering would be. Nonetheless, it put a very serious roadblock in the way of our movement, unfortunately. And so the movement felt the tactics had to move out into more direct action channels, which is a very, you know, and in fact, as Reverend Johnson pointed out, the public approval rating has plummeted for the General Assembly and even for the governor as well, who in some ways is very slightly more moderate than the General Assembly. What's interesting is, you know, citing the same poll Reverend Johnson mentioned, took place exactly 2 weeks ago by the PPP, publicpolicypolling.com organization. I mean, you know, it just shows that the approval rating has plummeted. It's very interesting. It has plummeted in response to an organized militant movement led by the African-American forces around the NAACP, led by the AFL-CIO, led by North Carolina Council of Churches. You know, it's very interesting that that type of coalition, that labor civil rights coalition, labor civil rights faith coalition, has struck a deep chord by standing up among North Carolinians. And I think that this really reveals the source of our power. You know, 8 years of organizing for HK on J and the decision to say, we can't take it anymore, we're going to stand up and fight this, that's been the slogan of the Moral Mondays. How do we respond to, you know, cuts to Medicaid? We fight, we fight, we fight is the chant. And that just has struck a chord. People really say, yes, we really do need to fight. Even Republicans, oddly enough, over 20% of Republican voters now have a disapproval of the General Assembly, as our state legislature is called. So it has been a key coalition to bring together. It's been a key set of tactics to follow, and although we're facing a really terrible situation, as Reverend Barber says, their victory is temporary. We know that what we are putting together will be capable of defeating them. I think it's a question of maintaining that force, developing the depth of this coalition so that it can begin to act on the local level, not just on the statewide level. And this is the direction we're moving, as Reverend Johnson pointed out today, with the 13 assemblies that are taking place this afternoon at 5:30 in the 13 congressional districts across the state. It's an effort to try to push the coalition organizing out more to the local areas where many of the campaigns, both on an electoral level and also the direct action type of campaigns, are going to have to take place if we're going to be successful, as we will be, in defeating this series of attacks. You had asked whether there is an effort to, discuss the situation, discuss the strategies, the nature of the attacks, and so forth, with movements in other states. The answer is yes. It's not. As you might imagine, it's not so easy to do that because the movement on a national level is very loose. You know, there's not a great deal of nationwide organizing going on. Nonetheless, there was a meeting some months ago at the famous Highlander Center in the mountains of Tennessee, and there will be another one calling some of the movement. These are small meetings, but they're sort of brainstorming sessions involving other movement leaders in other southern states. Reverend Barber has been working within the NAACP national framework, especially in the southern region that we're in, to establish a greater consciousness of this strategy of fighting back. And there have also been talks with labor leaders in other states. So, for example, we have regular visits from, for example, the president of 1199 and the famous Healthcare Workers Union in New York, and other things. So it's has been going on for quite a while, but since the Moral Monday protests have happened, these efforts have picked up steam, and I think people are quite interested in the way that this has gone forward. You know, we had a huge fight back response in Wisconsin to the attacks on labor rights there, last year or so. The style of fighting back, and it's in everybody's mind. People here think a lot about that. Reverend Barber has addressed that explicitly several times in speeches to the Moral Mondays in Raleigh. There is a consciousness of that and an understanding of trying to develop further this, the tactics that were first brought out in Wisconsin. So, you know, we have been occupying our state legislature. That's how the 900 arrests have occurred. But we've done it in a way that can be sustainable for a period of months, 4 months, in fact. Whereas
so the legislature closed down, really.
Yes, and then they closed down. That's right. But since April, it's been 13 weeks, so it's not quite 4 months. But, I think the probably your question about are there recall provisions in North Carolina probably comes from awareness of what the tactics were in Wisconsin. So we're following a slightly different course I think that we can see that people really are they know that they're under attack and they will respond to a strong type of coalition that reflects the true nature of the American people, the labor civil rights type of coalition. And it really is important to spread this and to spread the idea that it's the militant action, the direct action of this coalition that has just galvanized people in North Carolina and given people so much hope I'm hoping very much that this really will spread across the country, because these attacks, what we're facing in North Carolina is, as Reverend Johnson said, this is an austerity program. It just happens to be far more radical than any of the austerity programs that have been promoted in other states. But austerity measures have been taken in all across the developed industrial world. And I think that we can expect, we have to be prepared for a very long battle. And we do have to start identifying, as we have in our 14-point People's Agenda, certain key things to defend. We need to defend the democratic gains that we have made. We need to defend social services. We need to defend public education in particular. We need to defend Medicaid and Medicare and access to health care. We need to defend other advances that we made. North Carolina passed one of the most advanced, for states that still have the death penalty, we passed a racial justice act which allowed death row inmates to appeal their sentence if they on the basis of racial bias of the jury and of the penal system. And that has been very successful. On that basis, people who have been shown to be innocent have been able to avoid being judicially murdered in this state. But that's been repealed. So these are things that we need to defend the democratic gains that we have won. We need to defend social services. And we need to defend labor rights, which have been under attack in North Carolina for years and years.
Well, it sounds very, very interesting, Zach, your point about this is austerity, but it seems like austerity, too. It's austerity wrapped in voting rights, repression, suppression, and other democratic rights. So it's kind of like a intensification of austerity.
Yes. Yes,
efforts
is.
Here. And, as Reverend Johnson indicated, hundreds of thousands of people losing unemployment insurance, the state refusing to participate in Medicaid, and I would presume refusing to set up health insurance exchanges as well.
Yes.
One of those states. I want the listeners to understand there is a new Occupy movement going on down here, maybe more flexible and thus more clever. Not so subject, perhaps because of the flexibility, to attacks in terms of removal of folks, but there is another occupying going on in the state legislature here. Note that, everybody, please. And you mentioned, Zach, a direct action type campaign here. Obviously, we know there's protests. People are in the street, which is great. What else can you add to us in terms of other direct action tactics going on and being considered?
Well, at the moment, really, the thing that has been brought out in the Moral Mondays movement is the power of nonviolent civil disobedience, mm-hmm. which has been really has a very important historic place in the South. It is really proved to be a way that people can be galvanized on a moral level to understand the depths of the real conflict that's going on, and I expect to see that this approach, the nonviolent civil disobedience approach, will continue as long as necessary. At the moment, I'm not aware of any plans for that. In today's protests, this is really a first effort to make this movement active at the more local levels in the state. But along with that, there has been a call. Right now the focus is on today's actions, which will be taking place in 3 hours across the state simultaneously. But there has been a call issued as well to develop sort of people's general assemblies in each of these areas where we can address the sort of 14-point people's agenda and maybe deal with the questions that we are facing at the regional level. All of the different areas in the state face different issues.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the attacks of the legislature has been they've just taken on cities. They've just declared them arrogant cities, and some of the legislators have said that they have been trying to take away the Charlotte Douglas International Airport from the city of Charlotte. They try to take away Dorothea Dix Hospital from the mm-hmm. city of Raleigh. Try to take away the water system, the municipal water system.
Let me make a comment on that, Zach. I think that's very important because part of this attack on democracy is, it appears increasingly, using state level agencies and using the state to eliminate local city and agency decision making, or to override them. We see that in Michigan with Detroit, right? The state taking over and making workers pay with their pensions for problems of runaway shops there that have been occurring for decades, and the bad investments with Wall Street, with the pension funds and so forth, taking out on the workers there, the retirees. So that state interference, and we see this in California too. There's been an interesting movement in the Bay Area in California to stop foreclosures in the city of Richmond. And, there's a Green Party mayor there and so forth, and a real coalition, and they're attempting to use eminent domain rights for the city to take over these collapsed in value homes that are underwater and in foreclosure. And the city takes them over, refinances them, gives them back at lower interest rates to the folks who are living in them, and that's making the banks go crazy here, and they're beginning to look for allies at the state level and in the courts to stop that. So there's this part of this attack on democracy is using higher level political jurisdictions to run roughshod over local jurisdictions, take away their democratic rights. You mentioned the 14-point people's agenda. Reverend, can you or Zach tell us, summarize basically what that 14-point agenda is?
Well, I think it's very important to acknowledge how the agenda came about, because I think this is one of the most democratic movements from the base up. These 14 points included the Racial Justice Act. It included the elimination of 95-98, I believe, that forbid public sector workers from bargaining with the government. It included a stance even on war, and but it came out of a gathering of various organizations around the state, and then it was brought to a massive meeting in Raleigh, and the people have voted on it, and that's why it became the people's agenda. And even though the particular fights that we are undertaking in a lot of different areas, each one of them now can fit under one of those 14-point programs. I don't have them right in front of me. But I want to put the emphasis on this is different from a lot of movements that I've seen. This is very consciously done. It wasn't just a reaction to the losing of the North Carolina legislature. It was a building up of a Democratic base over 8 years. And now I think the question is drilling down, because I think you're absolutely right that the centralization of power on the state level and then pretty much negating municipalities when you want to, taking their water, taking their airports. I think what we have are growing leaders, young leaders, and joining intergenerational groups, and it's drilling down in district by district, county by county, city by city. That's what gives it real power. That's what gives it staying power. When you put together 160 organizations who are a part of the Forward Together movement, it's almost a miracle to have this just beyond paper listening, but all of these organizations are participating, and actually they're all located all over the state. So I think the 14-point program, there are a lot of, I've been a part of a lot of black agendas and different programs, and but they don't come alive on the grassroots level. This one, I think, has taken on legs and feet and hand and brains, and I think we are in the process now of drilling down what happened in Raleigh in district by district, and I think people are going to come up with creative tactics in these areas, some of which will be you know, nonviolent, civil disobedience type of thing, but some will be setting up local banks. And I mean, I think people are just beginning to think about all the different ways that we can challenge power. That's what has been unleashed in North Carolina.
Is there any place our listeners can go to see what this 14-point program is, or more information? You have a website, or
it's listed on the NAACP website.
Okay, so where would they go? Give me the NAACP. Is it just
Zach? Can you give that?
Yeah, you know, it's it's kind of long actually, because it's on a typepad blog site. So I mean, if you just Google North Carolina NAACP, you'll get it. Let's see, but there's also HK on J.
What is that? HK on J. What is that?
Oh, that's the name of the coalition that Reverend Johnson was referring to that started 8 years ago. Historic Thousands. H is for historic. K is for thousands, like kilo. On is for on. And then J is for Jones Street, which is the location of the state legislature. So it's HK on J is the name of the coalition. And if you go to hkonj.com, you will see the 14-point people's agenda there. It's one of the buttons you can just click, and you know.
The people's agenda, this 14-point program, has been around for a while. It's not something you just created this year. Am I correct?
Oh yes, it's been around for what, 7, going on 8 years now.
Okay. So
and that's what I think is important to understand, is that this has been a process over time that ballooned and grew, But it had roots before that. I was at the meeting that Zach mentioned over in Tennessee. We had labor leaders from all over the country, and just thinking about what it means to organize the South, and to we were there with some other representatives from southern states. And I think that North Carolina has become, if not a model, a tremendous inspiration for other places in the South and other places across the nation. Let me say this. I'm going to have to jump off of this call. Appreciate the opportunity to share, and look forward to doing it again sometime.
Well, I'm sure we will, and good luck to your protest today. But we'll continue trying to let the rest of the country know what's going on in North Carolina. Thank you for coming.
And thank you for what you're doing.
Okay. Zach, you're still with us, right?
Yes, yes.
Yes, okay. So if folks want to go and find out more, hkonj.com, which is the Historic Thousands on Jones Street website, and there they can find this 14-point People's Agenda program. That is the sort of driving program for these protests. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. hkonj.com, folks, and there you will find the 14-point People's Agenda, which is sounds like a real, true grassroots, bottom-up program. Not a bunch of intellectuals getting together at some university and saying this is the program. This is the real thing. Folks involved in real struggles and calling for forming people's general assemblies throughout the state. Wow, that really sounds interesting. Okay, we've been talking and talking because it's been so interesting. We need to take a brief break here, station break, and we'll be right back. Zach and I will continue on this discussion. This is Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. See you shortly again. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus, the show Alternative Visions. We're talking today about the attack on democracy and civil and labor rights, focusing on the state of North Carolina and the Moral Mondays protests that have been going on there. You know, North Carolina is one of a number of states where these attacks are going on, and as our guests have indicated, it's not just an attack on voting rights, but broader democratic rights, civil rights, and it's wrapped up in this package of pushing austerity. And I think, as one of our guests indicated, you know, the attack on voting rights and so forth is a preemptive strike to prevent people from resisting and trying to change these austerity measures. So the economic crisis and policies of the right wing here are tied in with the same policies attacking political rights. And we talked a little bit about how this has reflections in other states and whether the movement in North Carolina is attempting to coordinate with other states. You know, folks, you got to understand that these laws attacking voting rights have a lot to do with this organization called ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Council. We've talked about them before in previous shows. This is a super right-wing billionaire financed efforts by the Koch brothers and others to create legislation at the state level. They actually write the legislation, then give it to the staffers of the state legislators to pass. They invite and pay the transport and other costs, hotels and food and everything of these legislatures, have them come to these ALEC conferences. They just had one in Chicago, I think. And they tell them how to write these laws so that they introduce at the state level the various laws all at once. So it's coordinated. It's centralized. The attack on voting rights is coordinated and centralized, coming from the extreme right in this country. And it's not isolated to one state or this. And to fight it, there's going to have to be a coordinated state-by-state response. It also sounds to me like you know, the right wing and the legislators in North Carolina underestimated the grassroots Democratic response. As Reverend Nelson has indicated in our interview, the grassroots coordination had been forming for 8 years. It wasn't as if people were caught off guard, as they were in Michigan with passage of right-to-work laws, also pushed by ALEC, by the way. But folks had already begun organizing around issues in North Carolina, and thus were able to put together a resistance pretty quickly. Boy, this is very interesting, what's happening in North Carolina. Folks, keep your eye on North Carolina, both the attack and the defense and response. Okay. You know, comment on this, Zach. It seemed a double irony here. We talked about the irony of Voting Rights Act and the march on Washington in 63 and now the commemorative march here just this past weekend. Irony all about voting rights, and now we got voting rights under attack at the same time. But there's another historical irony here, it seemed to me, and that is, if I recall my history right, from the 1960s, a lot of the resistance, the sit-ins for civil rights and so forth throughout the South, initiated in North Carolina, didn't they? Wasn't it the sit-ins at Woolworth's and students and so forth in North Carolina that in the late 50s or early 60s set off that whole, you know, let's establish rights to eat wherever we want?
You know, that's exactly right, Jack. That was right. The sit-ins at the Woolworth's lunch counter in Greensboro, North Carolina, that's where Reverend Johnson is from, which were organized by a group of young people from North Carolina A&T University. They really sparked quite a response. In fact, what happened immediately at that time was the founding of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee in 1961, which also took place in North Carolina in the city of Raleigh, that involved some of those very students that took the courageous action in the Woolworth's lunch counter. And that was the organizing genius of Ella Baker to understand the importance of bringing the vision, the enthusiasm, the dedication of young people into the struggle, and to give them their own space in which they could pursue their organizing. And SNCC, of course, was at the front edge of the struggle for voting rights and of equality throughout the South.
Can you tell us what's going on with the students organizing as part of the coalition here? Reverend Johnson indicated that part of this attack on voting, one of the tactics is to move the locations for student voting 14 miles away, and who knows where that is, in order to discourage students from voting. This is an attack not just on ethnic minorities there in your state, but it's an attack on the poor, it's an attack on students and so forth. Are students a driving edge of the coalition here, or are they participating, or what's the role of students in the Moral Mondays?
Well, you know, just to be a little more precise about what the attacks are on the voting rights of young people, in fact, every single demographic that is likely to vote against the extreme right has had a very special measure in this 50-page voter suppression bill directed at that group. So students, the measure directed against students, in addition to moving polling places around, which is an age-old tactic, they're also bringing back the poll tax in some ways, that if a student is to vote where they attend school, then the parents will lose the right to declare them as a dependent on their income tax, and that can cost the parent anywhere from, you know, $2,000 to $2,500. tax penalty for the student actually registering to vote where they live. And of course, if they don't, since voting is on a Tuesday, they are faced with a choice between attending school and voting. So it's there are other methods. They can do an absentee ballot, but those are often not counted till too late. And so it's devious. So what is the role of young people? Young people are present at all of the events. But the level of organization, I have to say, varies from place to place. And I think this is really it's a challenge for the movement. I think that we do need to focus on helping to foster in whatever ways we can organization among young people, not just in the schools, but also young working people. And I think this organizing work in the fast food restaurants that's going on now is a very important step forward in that direction. And actually, it's always a point in all of the historic Thousands on Jones Street demonstrations over the years, as well as in the Moral Mondays, to bring forward students. So there were students. Recently, there was an attack where the Koch brothers, main ally here in North Carolina, Art Pope, a zillionaire who has funded a lot of these right-wing candidates, also funded a stealth attack on the Wake County schools, electing neo-segregationists. And young people formed an organization, high school students, to combat that and to bring back the people who had made the Wake County schools into a national model. So the organizing proceeds. I think it's really a challenge in every area to develop and build this thing.
Okay, that's an interesting. History seems to come around full blown here. The biggest attack on democratic civil rights in North Carolina 50 years ago. We see it once again, and we see the leading edge of the response and protests coming out of North Carolina as well. Okay, so let's move on here. You mentioned this 50-page voter rights suppression bill, North Carolina. I know when the Supreme Court opened up Pandora's box here in June, saying, times have changed and the states aren't really inhibiting voter rights and so forth, we can eliminate that part of the 1964 Civil Rights Voting Rights Act. It opened up the Pandora's box, and I understand that the Department of Justice, Federal Department of Justice, has sued Texas for its voter ID law. Has it also, or is it considering attempting the same with North Carolina's law?
Well, that's a concern of the movement here, and they have been discussing with the Justice Department expanding its suit to the state of North Carolina. So far, at least as of the last couple of days, there hasn't been any public announcement yet, but we're working on it. The NAACP has filed suit itself against the state for not only for the gerrymandering that led to the election. Of course, we were not able to make much progress in that suit, but also now for the violation of civil rights that occurring with this voter suppression bill.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's useful information. We're just about to run out of time, I think, but I want people once again to know that this 14-point People's Agenda program, a true grassroots program developed by voting of the folks who are at the grassroots, now in existence in North Carolina for a number of years and is the core program for this movement, can be accessed at hkonj.com. And if you, Zach, would send me that, if you have that, I will put it up on the Progressive Radio Network website here, and my website, and I'll ask folks all over that I know to post this agenda, people's agenda thing, because I think folks have to know about it.
Happy to share that with you, Jack. And
very good. We'll get that posted. And, you know, I think we're going to need some follow-on programs here on this topic. Let's see how things shake out over the next couple of weeks in North Carolina. And this is so much a part of what Alternative Visions is about. It's about grassroots, the people speaking that don't get to be heard on the media, and what's really going on in the country at the grassroots, and, of course, Democratic attacks, civil and labor attacks. We didn't have Ojamo on. Maybe we'll have him next time, and he can tell us a little bit more about the attacks on labor going on at the same time in North Carolina. We didn't really give enough attention to that, but we will. I'd like to thank you, Zach, and, of course, thank Reverend Nelson Johnson for coming on, and we'll talk about this again. This is Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions.